But as for your abandoned and desolate places, and your land which has been destroyed, really, now you will have too little space for its inhabitants, whereas the ones who devoured you will be far away. Isaiah 49 and 19, little children, our daily scripture for today from the Ward Green version of 2003. So we see, in keeping with the idea of the children of Israel returning and the enemies departing, it says in verse 19 that there will be too little space for the children or the inhabitants, whereas the ones who devoured Israel will be far away, Jehovah says in that chapter 49, chapter 49 of Isaiah, which we're studying in our daily scriptures from day to day. Oh yes, and I have not prepared the... Okay, well look at what I've done here. I've made the sizing bigger on the window. That's right. Never really noticed that too much, but it's better. At least it's bigger. Whether that's better or not, that might be debatable, I guess, but it's certainly bigger. Bigger now. We have the small headshot. It's bigger. We did finish chapter 5. That's right, yesterday. I might be a little absent-minded today because I haven't slept yet. And I decided I would just keep going. You know, when you have proper nutrition, you don't need as much sleep. And sooner or later, every so often, like because, as I explained before, the lunar cycle, or the day is 25 hours, when the moon gets back to the same position again, because it's at least, you know, different by an hour, because it takes at least 24 days, in fact, you know, or it's something like an hour. So what is it? I'm trying to think of how to explain that again. But every 25 hours, the moon comes back to the same position, or roughly 25 hours. It's more than that, because 25 times 1 is only 25 days, right? If it happened 1 hour per day. 25 times 1 for it to get back in the same position again. It has to come... The lunar cycle is 29 and a half days. So, in order for it to get back in the same position again in 29 and a half days, it must be an hour and a little bit... Let me think. It's 24. Does that mean it's less than an hour per day? 29 days. No, because in 25 hours the moon comes back. It's 25 hours and some minutes, I believe. But I'm too sleepy right now to figure it out, I'm afraid. I'm too sleepy to figure this out again right now, but it's an hour and some minutes. I worked out, I think, an hour and 12 minutes or something. Longer than 24 hours that the day is, because the moon has to make a complete 24-hour change. Wait a minute, though. Hang on. I still can't figure it out. Armenian History, Chapter 6. But the moon, it moves relative to the Earth, right? And relative to the sun, so that every 29 and a half days it comes back to the same position again. relative to the Earth and Sun. So, on average, 29 and a half days. So, therefore, yeah, 29 and a half days. So, that means, what does that mean? That doesn't mean it moves 29 hours a day. It just certainly doesn't mean that. It means that the moon is changing relative to the Earth's sun, you know, for those 29 days, and so every day it changes by something like an hour, because it ends up, let me think, why can't I figure that out? 29. It's got to complete the 24 hours in 29 and a half days, you'd think, right? It's got to complete the move. So maybe it's less than an hour. It seems like it's less than an hour now, whereas before I thought it was more than an hour. But anyway, it's about 25 hours that the moon cycle is per day instead of, because it's about an hour per day if it takes 29 days to complete, you know, the movement around the Earth again and come back to the same place. So maybe it's less than an hour a day. Maybe it's not more than an hour. Maybe that's why I was confused. I don't know. But like I said, I'm too sleepy. So I'm not going to work on that one today, I don't think. But Armenian tradition, let's see what we have here for 6 and 1. I think it's short. Is it? It's not. Oh, no, it's long. Okay. Ooh, well, we've gotten ourselves into something. We're not going to be able to read all the table here, obviously. Yeah. So Armenian history is the chapter title for chapter 6 and paragraph 1 of the Ark of Urartu. The Orient Express, chapter 6, is what we're studying today. We've used up 7 minutes already talking about the scripture and the moon. And Armenian tradition possesses a list of patriarchs in the line of Japheth of 43 generations from Hake, ruling 2735 BCE from above, to Peroyer, king of Army Supria, 748 BCE. This is the most complete genealogy of its kind, including 60 generations in all, from Hake to Vahi, ending in 350 BCE. Table 8, the Armenian patriarchs. I'm sure I can figure the moon out by tomorrow. Anyway. We're not intended to do everything on every single day, right? But Hake is the first generation on the list here in Table 8. And then it goes down through the list all the way, 60 generations to Vahi, who's the 60th generation, who is at the rulership or just his lifespan, but it's from 351 to 331 BCE. And he's the only one that has a date given, actually, on that list in that table. So, what's all this? History of Armenia? I've linked to the different chapters. I don't know if this works. Is it broken? No, there it is. It's there. Look at that. The links work. You can link to these different pages of the history of Armenia. It's on Wikisource, the website called Wikisource. Now, in the picture, we have Hake to the left here, shown in a painting by Hovnanian, and it's got the depiction of a flag, some kind of a building there. Looks like a map. At the feet of Hake, and he's got his, which should be his longbow, but it's very short. In the picture, in the painting, it's not the right size for a longbow. It's the grave of Belus with a flag, that's what it is. And Noah's Ark is in the background in this painting. Where's Noah's Ark? Let's see if we can see it. Yeah, I'm not sure. Oh, there it is. Noah's Ark is showing up on a mountain there in the background. There we are. Yeah. So we have it. We have Noah's Ark. See that right there? It's a boat with a roof over it, depicting Noah's Ark. So, and it's supposed to be on, in this painting, it's on Mount Ararat, but we know the Ark was not found on Mount Ararat, but rather on Mount Judy. Now, the confusion of languages, but it's in the mountains of Ararat, of course, not Mount Ararat. The confusion of languages that began with Babel by divine intervention of Jehovah has created a diversity synergy of expression through which we may see the world from a great multiplicity of viewpoints with different consequent eras. Robert K. Cooper writes in Get Out of Your Own Way, The Five Keys to Surpassing Everyone's Expectations. He writes clearly, you don't see the world as it is, you see it as you are. This line from the Talmud aptly expresses why you need help to create accurate perceptions of life as it moves forward. In his book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Mr. Stephen Covey addresses on page 278 how synergy works. Good, you see it differently. Help me see what you see. If two people have the same opinion, one is unnecessary. What a viewpoint that is. And we have a painting of the winterling crocus. Wow, what a painting that is. It's not a painting, it's a photograph, actually. But it's beautiful. Wow. Is it not? There's green flowers along with the purple ones. Oh, they're so beautiful. They complement each other, the colors. Green is complementary to purple. And there's some orange in the middle of the purple flowers. It's just stunning, the beauty of that. In the same way that the languages are confused, different views have emerged on many subjects, including chronology. Rather than seeing it as trouble, we may embrace it fully. The Armenian history is a remarkable story that fills in a great many details that were missing from our own history. When I had no information about something that I wanted to know about, I was looking for anything. And so I developed a particular skill set. I was highly attuned to searching, to looking more deeply into a thing from different angles. Then when I found something concrete, my skills changed to analysis, critical questioning, the rearrangement of known or proposed details into existing or adapted formulations, and in some cases a complete revamping of the formulation. During this process, I found that it was only when I found conflicting information that any serious changes occurred. I saw that old theories work so well with old information. By comparing different viewpoints, the formulation changed. Being open-minded, however, does not mean giving up truth. It does not mean allowing any stray thought at all, either. I found that searching and analysis must be very focused. In other words, I always visualized on what I was seeking. I could see in advance what result might be a desired one, based on what would narrow down the possibilities at last. The best arrangement is one that enables everybody to win. The story of Hake adds greatly to the legacy of our times. We have a few references at the end, and that's the end of paragraph 1 of chapter 6, or also, as we might call it, paragraph 6.1 of the article, The Ark of Urartu to the Orient Express. I think the most fascinating part of this chapter, not the article, but the chapter, is this picture of the winterling crocus. It's just so beautiful. To me, that's just... I'm just so sleep-deprived, that's all. There's nothing really boring about that photograph. Wow. It's just blindingly beautiful. Isn't it? Wow. I love that picture, that photo. That was from Wikimedia Commons. Winterling-005.jpg was the file name. But anyway, we have completed paragraph 6.1 of the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express. We've got 16 more minutes or so. In our study, we've got tons of time left. I don't know what we're going to talk about either. Usually there's lots of things that I never get a chance to talk about, right? I just don't get a chance. And so there should be, I'm sure there are lots of things I can talk about. What about the moon? Can we figure that out again? I don't know. But clearly the moon takes 29 and a half days to move 24 hours, so it's got to be less than an hour per day that it moves, right? For it to get back 24 hours after 29 and a half days. So yeah, it's less than an hour. But approximately 25 hours is, you know, approximately 1 hour different per day to get back a full day in 29 and a half days. So it's about a 25-hour day then, if we consider that we want the moon to be arriving back in the same place every day. And then, is that true? Yeah. Well, that's right. We have to allow it to get back to its well, the Earth won't be in the same position because if it's a 25-hour day, you know, it'll be later every day. It'll be 1 hour later every day when the moon is in the same position. That's what we're saying. But the Earth's not in the same position, you know. It's just that the moon has arrived back in the same position. I suppose we could say that's relative to the sun, though, isn't it? In that case, maybe it only takes, if it's relative to the sun, then it would only take 27 days or whatever the moon cycle is relative to the sun. But if it's relative to the, I'm trying to think, no, it's relative. If it's relative to the Earth, it takes 27 days, but if it's relative to the Sun and the Earth, it takes 29 and a half days. So, I mean, we can work it all out if we've given the preparation to considering it. We have to consider what direction the Earth rotates and the rotation of the Moon around the Earth and so on, right? We know the Earth... The Earth rotates, we know, from west to east, so that the sun appears to rise in the east. So the sun rotates opposite to the way the sun appears to move. So the Earth is rotating from west to east. And I'm trying to think, does that mean... I think almost everything moves in that direction. So the moon is rotating in the same direction. But I mean, if you look from west to east, looking from the North Pole, is counterclockwise. I think, right? Yeah. And almost everything in the whole solar system rotates counterclockwise. The only exception is the planet Venus and something else, one other, and the moon of Uranus or something, which is, you know, rotating in a completely different direction. Not even anything related to counterclockwise, you know, just sideways or something. So the axis of rotation is sideways. So everything else is counterclockwise. So the moon rotates around the Earth counterclockwise also, as you look from the north. Okay, so the moon is slowly moving, that's right. And so, you know, compared to the Earth and the Sun. But the Earth rotates 25 hours. And then as it gets about 25 hours, and when the Earth has rotated about 25 hours, that's when the moon is in the same position. So eventually it'll get back to the same time of day when the moon's in the same position. After 29 and a half days, it gets back to the same position again at the same time of day. That's the thing it takes. Otherwise, it's 1 hour later every day that the moon is in the same position. So it's no good to try to live a life of 24-hour cycles. It doesn't work. The circadian rhythms of the body won't adapt. You have to live 25-hour days. That's the only way to live. So you can't live this life where you have a 24-hour day. That's just not going to work. That's why I've found that it's always been true for me, anyway. It's got to be, obviously, because of the moon. But it's just the circadian rhythms are different by that 1 hour per day, roughly. That means that every 25 days or so, you have to miss a night's sleep. But I seem to be missing a night's sleep more often than that. And coming around full, every few days I'm coming around to another cycle, so I don't know what's going on, but you have to be in extremely good health to do that. You can't just skip a night's sleep, like, you know, if you're not in good health. I mean, I feel that the reason why I just don't need sleep, you know, that's the thing. That's why I can do that. If I don't need sleep, I just stay up a little later every day, and then eventually I'm back to the same time of day again. But I always seem to be living at the same, going to bed at the same time. I just skip a night's sleep every so often and then go to bed at the same time again. But it's kind of like today, I'm not in bed and I should be sleeping right now, because I'm going through that transition again where I'm going to skip a night. I don't need to shop. I realized afterward I don't need to shop right now because I thought I needed to get some more maple syrup, but I've got other sweeteners I could use instead of maple syrup. I've got honey. I've got agave syrup. I have all sorts of stuff. Brown sugar. I've got white sugar. I mean, I have all sorts of stuff. Why would I go and get more honey when I don't need it? You know, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense because I have these other things that I never use, and I should just use them. I've got lots of stuff like that. You know, I have beet juice in powdered form that I don't use very often. Or I bought it, I don't use it. I got powdered milk that I don't use very often. It's whole milk from Canadian cows in a powdered form. It's not 2%. It's, you know, it's the full milk, 3%, whatever. And I don't get to use that if I don't run out of milk. But I do have milk. I don't have milk right now. Anyway, I'm using cream instead of milk. But because I don't have milk, if I'm using cream, there's no calcium in the milk or in the cream.
The cream doesn't.
Cream has no calcium, or much less than milk. So if I'm drinking cream, I have to take a calcium supplement, which I take even with the milk. I take a calcium supplement because I don't. Excuse me. I don't get enough calcium when I mix a small amount of milk, which is all I have room in the glass to do. When I'm making my nutrition shake, I put in powdered wheatgrass, powdered raw organic chocolate powder, you know, or cacao, powdered raw organic chocolate, which is called cacao. Cacao is the name of raw chocolate in the English language. It's called cacao. Cocoa is cooked chocolate, you know, the cooked chocolate. So I put in cacao, wheatgrass powder, and my raw vegetable powder, which is a nutrition shake. And that, then by the time I get that in there and I add a little maple syrup or whatever sweetener I want to use, I mix a little water with that because it's too thick. It doesn't emulsify well. Or in other words, it doesn't combine well into a smooth liquid with cream, so I have to use water to mix it up, and then I'll add the cream. By the time I get the cream or the milk, and if I'm using milk, I can just mix it with milk. But even then, there's very little room for milk. There's only less than half a glass, probably, or maybe about half a glass, a little more than half a glass, which is a small glass. I don't know. That might be 6 ounces, 8 ounces at the most, but I don't think it's 8 ounces even. And then I drink that with maybe 3 ounces of milk. If I'm using milk, and so that wouldn't be a lot of calcium. I don't know how much that is. It's probably, I can't really guess. Only it's less than a few hundred grams of calcium, less than a few hundred milligrams of calcium probably. So I'd be drinking the milk and then still taking a calcium supplement like coral calcium with the milk, and I take magnesium with the coral calcium as a separate supplement. So calcium and magnesium and that milk shake, call it, or a latte, a nutrition shake, and I'll drink that, but it's always taken with vitamin K2 as well. Okay, so K2 in two forms of K2, the MK7 and the MK4, and both of those are taken with vitamin D, so I have lots of vitamin D in that, something like 16,000 units of vitamin D every time I have a nutrition shake, you know, so that's what I'm taking. Now, as long as I'm not taking a lot of calcium, then that's not going to be too much vitamin D. That's only going to be an overdose of vitamin D if I'm taking a ton of calcium, and even then, that's not enough vitamin D to overdose. Even if I'm drinking a lot of water with calcium in it and so on, which I was before. When I took 1 million units of vitamin D, then there was a problem with overdosing with calcium. But it's not a problem at all. In fact, if I don't get a calcium supplement, I'm deficient in calcium. Not so much if I take 16,000, but if I'm only taking 8,000 or 10,000, 10,000 units is not enough without supplementing with calcium. You know, I need, because I don't have any calcium in my water and I don't drink a lot of store-bought water which has calcium in it, for example. The iced tea I drink, it has a lot of calcium in it, I believe, because it's got a lot of minerals in the water that they use, wherever they get their water from to make the iced tea that they sell in the store. But I've tested it once. The iced tea has, I think, quite a lot of totally dissolved solids, hundreds of parts per million, which means probably a lot of calcium. Probably most of that's calcium, but I don't know exactly. But I do drink a couple of large glasses of iced tea per day, usually, too. And that is like more than 6 ounces. That's like, you know, 10 or 14 ounce, 12 ounces or something for each glass. So I'm getting calcium in that probably. But I'll know when I'm getting enough calcium because my fingernails will be really strong, and that's how I can tell. And my heartbeat will be regular if I'm getting, you know, it won't be going crazy like it does if I overdose on calcium. It'll be perfectly settled and, you know, 60 beats or less per minute, you know, when I'm relaxed. So I can monitor these things. Like right now, I don't know what it is. Can I even feel it with... One, two, three, four, five. It's speeding up a little bit because I'm measuring it. And it was going a little slower, just a little bit slower prior to when I first started measuring it. But because, you know, I'm aware of measuring it, that makes it speed up. Because I get my nervous system, you know, speeds things up or something. So, you know, it's interesting that when you measure your heartbeat, that happens. That's only if you're measuring your own heartbeat, I think. But anyway, I've got the blood pressure and the vitamin K2 is supposed to be able to reverse the arteriosclerosis or the hardening of the arteries too. Although people disagree on that, but I think it does have that reputation, but I don't think that it obviously doesn't work for everybody because some people don't have a healthy diet in general, right? They don't. I think all the other things that are in your diet, the vitamins, the crucial minerals, you know, magnesium, calcium, all the vitamin D, you know, the boron and, you know, whatever other minerals you need and whatever other things like iodine, all the vitamin B12, all the crucial nutrients that you need, omegas, the fatty acids and all that stuff. I mean, there's a ton of stuff that your body needs, and if you don't get it, you can't expect your body to work well even if you get the crucial K2 vitamin. But K2 vitamin has this phenomenal ability, absolutely phenomenal, to reverse osteoporosis even. And, you know, but normally you have to take a lot of it to do that. And that's where I got into the overdosing problem. That's the end of today. It's November 2nd, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 13:31 hours, North American Eastern Daylight Time for the last day. Tomorrow is going to be standard time. It's Ward Green. Thank you so much for listening and watching. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty and this is Cassie saying bye for now. And that's it.